Welcome to the Raising Values Podcast, where the traditional family talks. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify, and be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You can support the Raising Values Podcast through Patreon. Bill and Gillian are behind the mic, and we hope you enjoy the show. Welcome to the Raising Values Podcast. He told me right at the last minute, you're introducing this time. I was like, no, you do it. I did it last time.
But she didn't do it last time. I did it last time.
I can't remember. See our little down below our names, it says still hearing wedding bells. Are those wedding bells or just the bells you hear after I beat you in your head?
See, boys and girls, this is why you always buy your wife cast iron, because it's a little heavy for them to swing quickly.
Yeah, but then it knocks you out, and then you will be hearing bells.
But that's fine. I won't mind what happens next.
Anyway, welcome back to the Raising Values Podcast. This is our second episode, and today we're discussing marriage. So I hope you enjoy it, and there we go. I've introduced the show.
And I'll introduce the first topic, so... I don't expect the two of us to be in lockstep on a lot of this.
No, in fact, you're going to find that we're not in lockstep on most things that we talk about, which is what I said on the last episode, is that we do have disagreements. We obviously don't. I don't know. Do you still hear wedding bells? Way off in the distance.
No, I'm trying to think of like what way I want to take that question. Like, I was in this weird position by the time we got married. We'd been together for 3 years. So, to me, the wedding was almost more of a formality.
Because, yes, like, definitely.
In my head, in my heart, at the moment before we walked down the aisle, we were already married. We'd made a very firm commitment to each other. We'd made a very firm commitment to each other's families. Like, you basically called my mom and dad, and I had told your father that I will take care of your daughter no matter what comes. Like, to me, the wedding was a formality, so...
I was so ready for that wedding to be over with. I didn't even care. I did. There was one thing in our wedding that I was very particular about, besides the music, which was messed up. Y'all, our wedding was just a shit show. Nothing went to plan. The DJ didn't play the right music. Our officiant had a stroke while he was telling us to say our vows.
That, by the way, boys and girls, is a massive red flag, which in this case worked out okay. But normally, if God strikes dead the officiant during the ceremony, that's a bad sign.
Yeah, so he's up there having a stroke. Poor man. Oh, my gosh. And nobody realized what was happening. The Bible was literally in his hands, just shaking so bad that I thought he was going to drop it or tear pages out.
And he tried to marry you to your father.
Yes. So he never gave me away. He never asked, like, who gives this... bride or whatever to be whatever that they say, and that never happened. And so my dad had to remind him, like, hey, me and her mother give her away, which was kind of funny at the time. And then things started to go downhill, the shaking started, he couldn't remember what to say, and at the very end he was going to introduce us. And he forgot our names. And so someone in the crowd, I think it was my uncle, said, Philip Rabelais, like Mr. and Mrs. Philip Rabelais. And I was just like, what in the world? There are things that went wrong with where things were placed. But, you know, I did say something to Phil. And I didn't realize that Phil was mic'd during our wedding. And so... I know I said things to him over the mic that he was just like, no one knows this but you. Like, just be quiet. Like, no one knows this but you. The DJ played the wrong music. The photographer took the money and ran. He took the pictures. He was there to take the pictures. But all we got were thumbnail-sized pictures of our wedding. So we have no pictures except for what our guests took. Which is really hard. And at the time, I didn't want a videographer, But I am so thankful to my father-in-law and his friend who were there to video our wedding and did, you know, all this beautiful work, because that's all we have now. We only have that and then what the guests, mm-hmm. our first song was off. What we walked down the aisle to was wrong. It just was, and then the stroke, and then we signed the contract. The bill of sale. And they immediately took the officiant to the hospital because he was having a stroke. He didn't pass away, thank goodness. He he lived many years later, but what a wild ride. We could have eloped and been just as happy.
Which, listen, my father-in-law, like, in no joking at all, told me, he said, I will give you $5,000 if you can convince Hence Gillian to elope. And I worked on her really, really, really hard. And it wasn't even about the money. It was about, listen to me, we are already married. Let's go have a really nice honeymoon someplace. Skip all of this nonsense. We can do like a little bitty ceremony for like your parents, my parents, immediate family. Bing, boom, bomb, and we're out of here. But like we could skip all of this other like industrial marriage complex, you know, wedding complex nonsense.
Yeah.
And we could skip all the stress and just get straight to like, you know, the honeymoon and the rest of our lives.
Yeah. And then of course you get my family together and everyone's fighting, knock down drag outs in the dressing room. I remember it was almost time for me to come out to, you know, to the whole wedding thing or whatever. And my sister comes up to me and she goes, did you take something? Because you seem like really chill right now. And I was like, I just want this to be over with. Like, I am so done. And that was before the shit really hit the fan with the priest and everything else, the officiant and everything else. But anyway, we got through it. And
I never got
the honeymoon wasn't even wonderful. And
the honeymoon wasn't awful.
It wasn't awful, but there were some things that happened and didn't.
You were processing some things.
I was having a midlife crisis during our honeymoon.
Early. And
it was interesting. It was an interesting time in our life. So I don't even think there were wedding bells that day. So maybe we don't hear wedding bells. Maybe
that's what I'm saying. Like I wouldn't even say like I hear wedding bells. I know for a lot of people, the wedding is like, you know, one of the big events in their lives. And to me, it was just like, it was a formality that I had to get through. To me, I view our wedding like I do college. The whole point of me going to college was to get an education so that I'd be properly positioned to like take care of my family in the future. But going to college on the face of it meant nothing. It meant nothing to me. It was a means to an end. And I view the wedding in much the same regard. Like to me, the wedding was a ceremony because you wanted it. It was a ceremony for our family. But for me, it was like, I don't need this ceremony to feel like I'm married to my wife.
Yeah.
Like we could have got married in a field surrounded by wildflowers with three people and I would have felt the same thing. I'd have felt like I am now married to my wife.
Well, at 24 years old, I wanted this beautiful garden wedding. I had what I call a marshmallow cupcake dress.
Princess.
Which I look back on and I'm like, yeah, we should have eloped. Like, we should have eloped. We should have taken the money and run and had a very nice... I know, I will say it. You were right. Oh, God.
And now it's been documented.
But yeah, but then it didn't end there. We all went out to eat.
Buffalo Wild Wings.
We went out to eat later. And y'all, we got married in a college town that we went to college in. So we all had to go to the bar. And I was starving because I didn't eat during the reception.
I didn't either.
We get back to the venue because they have honeymoon suites there. So we get back. And our room is destroyed. Our friends and family have put everything everywhere.
Prophylactics on every surface that they would fit onto.
There was Vaseline on every door handle. There was Saran wrap on the toilet. There were condoms everywhere. So we get back. It's what, 1 o'clock in the morning.
And we're both fairly inebriated and still hungry because we didn't eat a lot where we went.
And now we have to clean up this suite. Otherwise, we're going to be charged this astronomical cleaning fee. So my wedding wedding night was cleaning up this suite that my friends and family just thought it was hilarious to do, on my hands and knees, crying because I have to clean up. And it was not until probably 3:30, 4 o'clock before we went to bed that night. And further, like, making me feel like we should have eloped. Like, we should have just eloped. We would have had none of this. But, I mean, it's an experience, and it's the beginning part of a show. I mean, is that why we got married? Was to talk about this on a show one day 15 years later?
I don't think this was necessarily in our sight line at that point, but, you know. Maybe that's the reason why my wedding doesn't bring back warm, fuzzy memories. It was just like, it needed to happen. It happened. And then I was married to my wife that I love dearly.
Yeah. I just would never go back. And if I did, everything would be different. And we would be on a beach or on a mountain or some sort of, I don't know.
We would elope.
We would elope. And that will be an option for Piper. Just elope.
Just elope.
You don't want all this mess.
I'm going to seriously encourage my daughter. And because she has, in some ways, she has more of my tendencies than yours, I could totally see her.
Oh, I could too.
I could totally see her being just to the piece, my parents, your parents, honeymoon, bye, we're out of here.
Yeah, like, not I could totally see that.
Because, like, that level of pomp and circumstance and nonsense is just an anxiety sandwich for her, like it is for me.
Yeah.
So.
Well. What is it? The more you know.
Yes, you live and you learn. But that was the wedding, which was interesting.
That was the wedding.
Marriage.
How do we view marriage? You go first. I intro'd the show.
So, call me old-fashioned. I deserve some of that. I mean, I recently turned 40. But...
Oh, God. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Excuse me for a second. I have to get a hold of her reset button so that whenever she makes noises, I just give her a good squeeze.
Go ahead. How do you view marriage?
So, like, I view marriage in very old-fashioned, traditional terms. Like, to me, marriage is, it's supposed to be a monogamous relationship. It's supposed to be a lifelong relationship. It is not something that is easily or casually entered into, nor casually tossed aside. And it is a commitment not only like between husband and wife, but as a commitment to each family and to the community that we are going to like enter this relationship, and we're going to, like, you know, in the biblical terms, two bodies become one. That is what marriage is really meant to be. So I look at, and because of that, I look at the vows I took to be your husband as vows I took with you, but also with like your parents. You know, like it was a promise to your parents that I'm going to take care of your daughter no matter what comes. And by extension, your grandchildren. They're under my protection too. So that's, I think, why I take marriage so seriously, because I view it as much more than just this. Well, we met in Vegas. We came home married. It's not a simple casual thing. And it's not a, well, if it doesn't work out, we'll just break it up later. It's like a, no, you should do all of your thinking about whether or not this is going to work out before you get married. And you should take sufficient time before you get married to make sure you feel like you have a pretty good understanding of who this person is, and are y'all really compatible in ways beyond, oh, he's cute or oh, she's pretty. You know what I'm saying? Like, I guess that's kind of where I get frustrated, because I feel like most people view marriage in a much more casual way than I do. And to me, it really was a deathly serious commitment, like I guess I am with most commitments I make. If I make a commitment, you know that about me. I'm in it, you know, good, bad, or otherwise, no matter what comes, because I've given my word.
Yeah.
And to go back on my word is like physically painful to me.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. At 24 years old, I was so, I didn't know what, I guess I really just didn't think about what marriage was. I knew that we were going to get married. We were going to live together. You know, we were going to say these vows or whatever. And it's not that I didn't take them seriously, because I did take them seriously. I didn't think about it as in depth as you just described it at 24. And it hit me much, much later. I take that back. It didn't hit me much, much later. It hit me after we got married to really hone in on what
you had agreed to do.
What did I agree to do again? Can you pull that contract back out and tell me?
There's a word for that. It's called buyer's remorse.
I did not have buyer's remorse. But yes, I do feel that way now, like in our marriage. And I think our marriage has gone through ups and downs, just like everyone else's marriage goes through ups and downs. And it is work, and it's not 50-50, it's 100-100. And you have to put in that effort. I did know, though, going into our marriage, what I didn't want in a marriage. And no offense to my parents at all, but watching and growing up in my house was not always easy. And I watched the relationship that my parents had. Now, my parents are still married, but I knew that there were things that I wanted from my husband and things that I didn't want from my husband. And again, please, that's not me saying that my parents are these horrible people or whatever, but you learn from your parents, and those are your first examples of what a marriage is. And, you know, it's funny that I bring this up, because my aunt shared something on Facebook yesterday that said, forgive your parents because they were learning too.
Yeah.
And that just was like, oh, that hit me. Like, oh my gosh, yes, they were learning too. And we're learning as parents. But I feel like it's always at the forefront for me of, this is the example we're showing our child. And I want her to have a good example. I also want her to see us argue. Not like if it's a closed door argument, then absolutely. But she needs to see that we do disagree, and you're not always going to agree with your husband, and you're not always going to agree with what they say or what they do or the tone they take, or, you know, even the things that we talk about and agree on. I mean, you know what I'm trying to say, like different topics and things. You're going to disagree, but at the end of it, your goal is the same. You're on the same team. You play for the same team. You are partners, you are coworker, whatever you, however you want to put it. I want her to see that even though we have a disagreement, we still come back to the same conclusion. I love you, you love me, and we can disagree and still love each other.
Yeah. And the other thing that I believe you believe, I've said it out loud quite a few times, is that, like, your children's blueprint for themselves and their hopefully, possibly, eventual spouse is their parents.
Yeah.
So, like, me having a daughter, I can teach my daughter nothing about being a woman, because I've never been one. Don't plan on trying it anytime soon. You have to teach her, through your example, how to be a woman, how to be a lady, what behavior is appropriate towards her boyfriend's fiance, spouse, whatever. Mm-hmm. You have to teach her that, because I can't. But on the flip side of things, I have to be the one to teach her how her boyfriend, her fiance, spouse should treat her.
Absolutely.
By how I treat you.
Yeah, I don't want her to get into a relationship and expect anything less than what she sees her father give her mother.
And she won't. That's the thing.
And because of that, she will have higher values and will kick to the curb the ones who don't meet those standards. And hopefully she ends up with someone that treats her amazing, you know, and they can work through those disagreements, and they can work through and see the common goal at the end of the tunnel of, because let me, okay. See, this is why I like doing this, because it's like therapy for me. Okay. When we were younger in our marriage, we would hurt each other's feelings, and hurt people hurt people. And so for me, when my feelings were hurt, I would do what I had to do to hurt Phil's feelings.
Was a pretty high bar.
Which was a high bar, but it was awful of me to feel like that. I had to learn as an adult how to cope with anger and how to cope with disappointment, and how, you know, if my feelings got hurt by someone, I had to learn as an adult to do that, because I was not taught that as a child. And so when I got married, and now I live with this man, not only do I live with him, my God, I'm with him all the time. And I'm still growing and learning. I mean, your brain doesn't stop growing and until you're 28. We got married at 24. And so I would hurt you because my feelings were hurt, even though you didn't intend to hurt my feelings. Your intention was to get your point across, not to hurt my feelings. And so I had to learn how to stop doing that. I had to learn how to fight fair. And we did do therapy and we learned how to fight fair. And I think I'm better now. Am I? I'm better. He's mm-hmm. shaking his head. So when the audio goes out, there is a actual yes in there.
Yes.
You can say yes. Thank yes. you. So yeah, that.
Yeah. But like I said, those that. It, and to your point about how you hadn't, I guess, thought that far into marriage when we got married, like, I had. And I'm not saying that, like, you should have. But, like, I've been very upfront about the fact that, like, I asked myself some very serious questions before I asked Gillian to marry me that I had to have yes answers to. Like, is this a woman whose values are closely enough aligned to mine that I think we can meet in the middle on things we don't fully agree on? Is this the mother I want to be, the mother of my children? Which was a big thing with me because, like, before Gillian and I got together, I really didn't want kids. I'd kind of given up on marriage and finding Mrs. Rabelais. I'd given up on having kids because, quite frankly, I'd kind of surveyed most of womanhood out there and came to a very quick, not like that, but I'd come to a very quick conclusion that, like, okay, of all of these women, there are very few that meet my qualifications and that see marriage the way I do, and I just don't want to have kids with any of them, so why would I bother to get married if the ultimate goal is not to have a family? And then I met her, and my mind changed. But, I mean, to me, this was, in typical duct tape fashion, this was the things I was looking for out of you before I asked you to be my wife were very concrete things. They were very, very rational things, I want to say.
You know what I'm saying? It's not rational. So how did you get rational out of it?
Well, no. What I mean is, like, does she have it within her deck of cards to be a good mother? Is okay. she compassionate? Is she kind? Is she patient?
Yes.
You've had to work on some of that. But I guess my point is, like, I was looking for a certain set of personality traits and values that I thought would make you a good wife and a good mother. And I found those. And when mm-hmm. I found those, I was like, okay, this might work. And I felt like our values were closely enough aligned, we can make this work. But I feel like the average person just rushes to the altar because somebody looks cute in a wedding dress. And I'm like, I don't think that is the ultimate criteria by which we judge a lifelong commitment that is going to be tested often.
Often, yes. Okay.
So I want to acknowledge this comment from Benji before we move forward.
Congratulations.
Yeah, definitely congrats. I hope y'all find some wisdom in the things we talk about here. I mean, I don't think Gillian and I have, like, got everything figured out, but I feel like we've kind of been through the ups and downs enough to say, I think we stumbled onto at least some of the secret sauce that makes it work.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so. Next.
So, sources of pressure and discontent.
Uh-huh.
Now, I wasn't sure how to word this, but, like, everybody knows that marriages are tested. I don't know if it's fair to say they're tested more today than they were in the past, or if maybe just the caliber of person is not able to stand up to that pressure today like they were in the past. Maybe we've gotten a little bit, maybe it's a combination of, like, we as a society have gotten a little bit soft, and we've begun to view things as disposable. Disposable razors, disposable cars. Yeah, so as soon as something stops being pretty and stops being fun, we throw it off on the side and get something new. And mm-hmm. that seems to be a societal trend. But I also think, I think about that, and I also think about, like, I think about past generations that had to live through the Great Depression, had to live through world wars, had to live through food rationing, had to live in a time when life was hard, and life ended quickly. And as a result, when you found that someone that you were in love with and you made a commitment to, there was no swaying you off of your path. You were going to cling to that person like the last breath of air in your lungs. Mm-hmm. And I compare that to today. So it's multifaceted. Like, on the one hand, I see where's all this outside effort coming from to disrupt a marriage, and why is marriage so much easier to disrupt today?
Well, I think you're onto something with the everything is disposable. You know, you've used a razor so many times, you throw it away, you get a new one. Your phone stops working, you throw it away, you get a new one. And I think that people are so used to that, and being able to just buy another one. You know, there's just that old saying of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But if it is broke, then you do fix it. If it's broken, fix it. And that applies to marriage. In my eyes, that applies to marriage more than most things, because not only is it just a relationship, but so much falls on that commitment. Your children, obviously the relationship together. And, you know, in an older time, it was a view of the community and making sure, you know, the community held that husband to high standards of taking care of that family and making sure they were well provided for and doing whatever was possible to make sure that his wife and his children didn't go without, you know, within certain mm-hmm. measures or whatever, but it was a community type of thing.
And there was also an expectation that the wife take care of the children and the husband.
Absolutely.
Because, like, and we're talking about, I don't know, like, what time period to put on it. Maybe 100 years ago is a good place to start.
That's a good place to, yeah.
But, like, I've explained this not so much to Gillian, because I think she knows, but like, I've explained this to other people. I'm like, you know, societal pressure was a hell of a thing back in the day. And like, if a man took his paycheck and went to the bar and drank it away and didn't have money to take care of his wife and kids, he was shunned by the community. Like, literally his boss would pull him aside and be like, hey, you do that again, you ain't working here anymore, because I don't want to have the town drunkard associating with my business. His friends would shun him.
Yeah.
His father, if he was alive, would probably whoop his butt in the alleyway. Mm-hmm. Like, all these people around this man would encourage good behavior, because his bad behavior was a reflection on everyone he knew. And by extension, if you had a woman who, you know, was unkind to her husband, was neglectful to her children, was neglectful to the household, like, she would be shunned by the community.
Or even became the town drunk. Or
the town drunk or the town floozy, yeah. Mm-hmm. The townspeople, her family, for God's sakes, somebody would administer a very quick straightening out to her, because that's not appropriate behavior.
And think about women who got married, I mean, pregnant out of wedlock and at that time. And not, you know, it's much more common now, and it's not so much looked down upon and everything else. I mean, how many babies born in our family were out of wedlock?
Yeah.
And that's not to say that those people aren't on a higher scale than people who get married and then wait to have children, because they're not, because that relationship still has to work. So that man and woman still have to work, and they're still in the same place as a married couple with children. They're still the example to that child. And it's important. I think it's even more so important for someone who commits themselves, not necessarily in a marriage, but commits themselves to that partner who they have children with.
But at the same time, like, I try not to take a very judgmental stance on pregnancy outside of wedlock.
We definitely can't.
But I am very quick, like, especially with my own daughter, I'm very quick to point out, like, I'm not saying that person is a bad person for having done that, but it makes life a hell of a lot harder. For her, for the children, it makes it a lot harder. I mean, you know what you went through, you know, immediately after childbirth. And to have to do that without me standing by your side would have been awful.
You're talking about a couple that gets pregnant out of wedlock, and then they break that commitment.
And statistically speaking, that tends to be what happens more often than not.
Absolutely. Yeah, it does.
There are couples who get pregnant out of wedlock and stick together, and they are a loving couple that rallies around doing the best thing by a child. That does happen. Mm-hmm. It's not the average. The average is, that's your problem, sue me for child support, or get the heck out of here. And the minute that happens, that mother is largely on her own. And 18% of baby daddy's wages doesn't replace having that man in the house to set the example, right, and to be dad.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like, I try not to be judgy, but I also am very quick to say, like, these are the things that comes along with that, and these are not good things, and you will not debate me about those being bad consequences of getting pregnant out of wedlock, because there is no debate about that. There's no debate about the fact that raising children in a single-parent household tends to lead towards all these unintended consequences. I mean, it's statistics. If you want to argue about math, go for it. But this isn't Common Core math in this conversation. One and one is always two.
And not every couple believes in marriage or believes that a paper makes them a committed True. To one another. Now, so
plenty of marriages that there might be paper, but there's no commitment.
Absolutely. That is definitely, I mean, we see it all the time, but I do think that the word marriage can be different for other people. You know, there is common law marriage, and there is,
yeah,
to me, it's a committed relationship that shows an example to their children of what a committed relationship is.
So the word commitment is the key word there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. I've been saying that word a lot lately.
I know.
Been agreeing with you.
I know. I can't remember like where I use the word committed relationship, where I use the word married. Like in my head, they're the same thing, but I can understand that for other people, like, they're not exactly the same thing. So
yeah,
I will attempt.
Because you do have people that, I mean, not all marriages are done in a church or with a priest or with a whatever. True. They're sometimes with the justice of the peace, but those same ideals are all there together. But if you never do those things, if you never sign that contract, are you still in a committed relationship? And that's something that you have to decide for yourself. And then you have to put in the work.
Yes.
To stay and do.
The work comes next. What? But we have to talk about the...
Oh.
The work comes next, but we have to talk about sources of pressure and discontent.
Oh, yeah. We never did do that. Pressure and discontent. We kind of talked about this before we went on, but finances are always, always a point of discontent and pressure. And I think I can draw from one couple that we know that their entire marriage has been a fight on their financials.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody does this with the money and somebody doesn't do this with the money. And well, how much does he have in his checking account and how much do I have? And it's very much a counted tit for tat. Well, he pays this bill, but I only get this much to spend in the month. And so it's just always been, for that couple that we're speaking of, it's always been the point of contention for them, which didn't do well. It didn't do well for their children.
Yeah. And by the same token, like, I think, I mean, obviously, like, when I say finances are important, I mean, if you don't manage your finances as a family, like, it makes a lot of things very, very tricky and tumultuous. But to me, like, finances are a means to an end. I mean, I had this conversation with peers my own age when we talk about like retirement savings versus leisure and this and the other, and I'm like, there is no right or wrong answers here when it comes to finances. The answer is every dollar I take away from saving for a rainy day to spend on leisure is probably $1.10 or $1.20 less I have in the future. Like, that's the idea of like spend it now versus save it or invest it for later. And there's a balance point to be had there. So there's no wrong answer, except I'm not going to save for a rainy day because, you know, I am a prepper at heart, and not saving for a rainy day just means when the rainy day comes, you're going to get you're going to be in a really bad situation. Mm-hmm. But I also tell people, I'm like, you know, when it comes to, this is the call of the conversations that we had about all the questions I asked myself, like, are our values compatible? This was a sticking point for me with you before I asked you to marry me. Because I knew that the way you managed money was dramatically different from mine.
And well, could you even say it was managing money? It was just spending money.
I didn't want to go there, but yeah, I mean, this was something
young and dumb.
Yeah, but this was some, and I was too. I wasn't a financial genius in my 20s. I had to learn some of this stuff by school of hard knocks and admitting my father was right when I'd rather not. But like, I knew this was going to be a source of discontent for us, and I knew this was something we were going to have to work through, and I'm glad that you were open-minded, and I was able to like show you, if we do this, then you can still spend money and have fun. We just have to like write it down on a piece of paper so that we know that's where the money went. Mm-hmm. And I think that the decision for us to not have joint accounts and to have separate checking accounts, I can think of once or twice in our marriage where that made things a little bit trickier, because like it would have been really easy for the two of us to have our finances joined so you could, my money and your money, we're in the same pot. But I feel like as fiercely independent as the two of us were when we got married, and the fact that because we got married, because by the time we got married, like we both had jobs, you had graduated college, I was in my last semester, like we were close enough to establishing ourselves separately that to come together, there had to still be some separation just to make our personalities work together. And one of those was separate finances. Yeah. So throughout our marriage, Gillian and I have always been very open about this is how much I make. We don't hide that from each other. We don't hide from each other how much is in our checking accounts or our savings or anything.
Even though I sometimes don't like to admit how much is in my checking and savings account.
Yes, but that's because you judge yourself and think I'm judging you.
Okay.
So anyway.
Moving on.
But like I said, that's the thing of it is like, I look at that.
Gotta have money to manage it. Joe, being truer words were never typed out on a comment section.
Yeah. But, I totally lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry.
You kill me with that.
We had different accounts.
Yeah, and separate accounts. We always looked at how much the two of us brought in, and we would kind of apportion bills between the two of us, roughly even with how much money we were making. So, like, back when Gillian made more than I did, she paid a greater percentage of the bills. Because the idea was like, okay, if the total money coming in is X, and the total bills are 60% of that money, which I'm pretty sure it was higher than that sometimes. But then we were going to split things so that roughly 60% of Gillian's money goes to bills and roughly 60% of mine goes to bills. And then the two of us both had to buy stuff like gas.
Groceries is actually part of our...
Groceries was budgeted.
Yeah, groceries were budgeted.
But yeah, things like gas, things like when you wanted to go eat with your friends in the French Quarter because you were working down there, like that came out of your money because that was how you chose to spend your money. Or when you wanted to go get your hair done, that was your money. Mm-hmm. And most of my money got stuck into savings because I was, at the time, I was still autocrossing. So like, you know, work on the car and events and all that stuff. That's what I spent my money on. But we were able to like come together and say, okay, this stuff here in the middle is what we have to agree on because it's for both of us. And then this stuff on either side of the margins is like, she can spend it however she wants because it's budgeted. Like if you budget $200 a month and that is your money to spend, you spend every penny of it. I don't care what you spend it on. Mm-hmm. But if you spent $200 and one penny, now we have to have a discussion because that penny can't come from somewhere else.
He is not that dramatic.
For illustrative purposes. Right. Like that's how we had to make our financial system work. Mm-hmm. But so yeah, finances is a huge, huge source of pressure. Mm-hmm. Are you waiting for me to say it?
Yeah.
Well, probably the other major one is intimacy, and that's not always just physical. I've seen people that are in relationships where there's like there's no cuddling, there's no warmth, there's not a nice word said. They literally might you.
We've been there.
If you didn't know any better, you'd think they were roommates.
We've been there.
Yeah.
That was at the point at the. during my postpartum where it was the hardest for me to have any sort of intimacy or even the drive to want to just kiss you when I got home or to hug you or to just, you know, hold your hand or whatever.
Be in the same room as me?
Sometimes be in the same room with you, but it took a lot for me to want to do that. And going back to the last week's episode, when you said love is a choice, that was a part of my life that, yes, it was a choice to love you. I did have to wake up in the morning and say, he loves me with his whole heart and soul. I love him, knowing I love him with my whole heart and soul. I have to make the choice to hold his hand today, or I have to make the choice to kiss him goodbye, or hang up the phone and say, before I hang up the phone and say, I love you, or those things I had to force myself. And please don't take that the wrong way. It was a, it was a time in my life where I was the absolute lowest. I didn't love myself to even love you. And you can't pour from an empty cup. And there was nothing coming out of this dry cup. I wasn't loving myself. I wasn't loving you. I wasn't loving our child. I was simply existing in a world, very dark world. And we got through that. And that, I won't go too much into it because two banners down, we'll talk about divorce. Yeah. But, it was a time where I had to choose to love you. So we've been through the lack of intimacy. And of course, segueing now, because my brain does this, a woman is going to go through ups and downs in intimacy. There are so many hormones that drive intimacy. And
a hormone hurricane, one might say.
Sometimes it just so happens that women don't have regulated and, well, I would say, I don't know, I'm not a doctor. 98% of the time, a woman's hormones are not perfect. They fluctuate, they change, they go up and down. And
but if you're a doctor that knows about lady hormones and want to come on the show as a guest to talk to us about it, feel free.
Well, I mean, I can speak to what I've gone through. And what I've gone through is having such low level hormones that libido and intimacy was not. It just, there was not even a scale there. Like nothing happened. But what we did to fix things, well, okay, it wasn't a forced intimacy. There were little steps that you took. There were post-it notes around the house that gave me these little pick-me-ups, like, I love, you know, just little post-it notes that he would write me, super sweet things. And they hang in my mirror now, on my mirror in my bathroom now, as little mantras, I guess. And I read them every morning. I really do read them every morning. But at the time, my brain was so blocked to intimacy. They were just paper. They were just words on paper. And it took me a while for my brain to get back to normal, for me to actually read those and think, one, Phil, my husband, who is Phil, and you should know who Phil is, actually stopped what he was doing and wrote down on post-it notes and thought about this whole process, because love him to death. He is not the most
romantic.
I literally, there was a time where I had to put
duct tape.
Send your wife flowers today because it is our anniversary or whatever. So there were times where I had to help him along the way, but he did this. I didn't know it was happening until I found these post-it notes, and it was super sweet. But there's definitely been times.
It's also worth pointing out that, like, and I don't know what part of my personality forces me to be this way, but like, I don't do the whole sit around thing very well. Like, even when Piper and Gillian are both lounging in the house or just hanging out on us, like, as soon as we end this, they're probably both going to be on the couch reading a book and just enjoying peace and quiet. And I'll probably go get the chainsaw and go find something to cut down. Because, like, I always, with very few exceptions, unless I'm just, like, emotionally exhausted, really, yeah. I always want to be getting into something. I always have a to-do list. So I'm always in motion and I'm always doing stuff. So for me to, like, stop and write love notes, that was out of the ordinary for me, because it was like, This sounds so stupid to say it out loud, but like I paused my to-do list. Sorry. It sounds dumb to say it out loud, but like I have this weird personality where I don't stop. I don't sit down. I don't rest.
I don't take days off. It drives me nuts.
But it gets stuff done.
Go ahead.
I don't remember what I was thinking that day. I knew you were at a low point. I knew you were hurting, and I knew that you needed a reminder of who you were. And I think that's kind of the way I looked at that point in time back then was like, this person I'm living with is not my wife. She's forgotten who she is. And I have to try to help remind her who she is and bring her back to us. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I interrupted.
I don't remember what I was going to say. So the two sources of pressure and discontent that we've talked about are financial and intimacy. And of course, if you have something else, we would welcome that in the comments if you're on the live show. But I don't know. What else do you think are points of pressure? And
I mean, those are certainly the big ones. I mean, you could argue time, but to me, like if a person is not apportioning to their spouse the appropriate amount of time, I consider that a certain amount of intimacy. Like, if I was never here, because I was always, like, out with the boys and everything in the evening, I wasn't here with you and your daughter, being dad, being husband, time could be a pressure, because there's only so much time in the day, and this is a society that places a lot of demands on our time, and the majority of people are very go, 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 social media, gotta get on TikTok, you know, it's like information overload 24 hours a day from the time we wake up to the time we go to sleep. And there's a lack of people who think to themselves, I just want to like have a quiet evening with my wife without the cell phones in our faces or without taking Instagrams of what we're eating. Like, I just want to talk to my wife, or we want to go sit on the back porch.
Yeah, we do that a lot.
Just visit, just talk. I mean, like for me and my wife, when we go on a date night, there are very few rules. But one big one is we stay off of our cell phones, which we do that when we go out to eat anyway. Like, yeah. We have a very...
Well, just anytime we're having a meal, cell phones are not a part of that meal.
Yeah. Unless it's an emergency or, you know, something reasonable. I mean,
right.
Hard rules all have exceptions. Mm-hmm. But, like, we keep our phones off. We talk to each other. We don't even talk to each other about anything. It's that consequential most of the time. A lot of times it's just to talk and to visit and to have that chance to, like, block the rest of the world out, just reconnect as husband and wife like we used to do, you know, before life got really complicated.
A lot of times we talk about the same things, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think it gets boring, because people grow and change. And so it's always interesting to get your perspective on something that maybe we haven't talked about in a few years. Or it's interesting to see how you've grown or how you've changed. And I know for me, the same thing, because I've said it on the Matter of Facts podcast that my values have changed over the past few years. And when you started prepping was when I, you know, was just like, oh my God, what is this man doing? And now I'm like full in, like, let's do this. So it's always good to rehash certain conversations just to see where each other still are or where they've moved. Like, where is that dial now? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have to keep lines of communication open. So not only so that you can grow as a couple, but you are, I forgot what I was going to say. Not only so that you can grow as a couple,
but kind of reassess where the other person is.
So that you can still see, you know, like, you're not stagnant. Does that make sense?
Okay. It does. Now, would this be the appropriate spot before we get to the next banner to talk about the kerfuffle of our honeymoon?
Sure.
Your little midlife crisis.
My midlife crisis.
So, from my perspective,
oh Lord,
I think the stress leading up to the wedding didn't fully set in until we checked into that hotel room on the night of our honeymoon.
It was on the way to the honeymoon.
Oh, I was driving, so I wasn't.
I was crying. I cried the whole way to our honeymoon. I cried.
And most of the honeymoon.
Yes, I was having a midlife crisis. I was very, very upset that my name had changed, which I know I could have not changed my name, but that was requirement sounds really harsh, but it was a requirement fulfilled that I changed my name.
It was an expectation.
And I was totally fine with that. I really was. But had you seen me the night of our honeymoon or on our way to our honeymoon?
Which was the day after we got married, by the way.
Yes, like, we didn't leave right away for our honeymoon.
Well, we woke up.
You're making this worse for me.
Sorry. We woke up the day after we got married in the honeymoon suite, had to finish
cleaning
up so that your parents wouldn't get murdered with the cleaning deposit. And then we had to go to my parents' house because the night of the wedding, we were like making our escape in my Mazda Miata, and I had specifically told everybody involved, leave the top up. Because I didn't want all the stuff they were throwing to wind up like down in the car, underneath the seat, underneath the carpet and everything. Because they were throwing like, I think, candies, weren't they?
Yeah, it was this, I don't know, it was this rice stuff.
So I knew if all that stuff wound up under the carpet, I was going to wind up with ants getting into the car. And of course, what happened when they pulled the car up, the top was down. Which in hindsight might have made it easier to stuff you and the dress down into it.
Yeah.
But because part of you, I mean, you had dress over the center console. You had dress up on the dashboard.
Oh, God, there was nothing went right at our wedding.
But we had to stop at my parents' house on the way out of town so I could, like, take the seats and the carpet out and vacuum all the
candy. He literally took the seats out of the car so that we could vacuum all this stuff out, which I don't blame you. It needed to come out.
But to be fair, in a Mazda Miata, the seats are only about that far off the floor to begin with. So, like, they had to come out or we were not going to get the candies out. But anyway, so we do all that. We don't get to the hotel until sometime that afternoon. We check in, and that is when the full weight of your folly caught up with you, and you were very, very upset. And I like the memory I have, and guys, I love my wife. I've totally gotten past this, but the memory that will forever be seared into my brain was her in the bathtub crying and me sitting on the bed thinking, oh my God, I'm going to get divorced as soon as I get home. Like, this is going to be the shortest marriage in Rabelais family history because she's going to ask for a divorce any minute now, and I'm going to go home and get divorced from the honeymoon.
I was not going to ask for divorce. I just needed to grasp the situation.
But I was panicking.
talk about that time when, you know, a woman's hormones are totally out of whack. I was crying because I had to change my name. I was crying because now that my name is changed, I'm legally more closer related to Phil's family than I was to my family. And so there was that whole, I'm not a house anymore. And it was rough for me. I don't remember, y'all, it was just so traumatic. I don't even remember, like, why else I was upset. I do remember arguing with you a lot. I remember arguing with you at the pizza place that we went to dinner one night because I think my spaghetti came out cold or something, and you were like, just eat it, like, we're going back. We can heat it up, whatever, just eat your dinner. And you don't love me. Why? It was awful.
And this is the same woman that will not send food back under normal circumstances for any reason.
No.
Like, she will choke it down because she can't stand to waste food. But on this one instance, she was ready to go to war over her spaghetti being cold. And I was just like, applying what I knew about her up to that point, I was like, why are you pitching a fit about this instead of eating it? Because any other time, I'd be the one telling you to send it back, and you'd be the one saying no.
It was wild. We did have a redo of our honeymoon years and years later.
10 years later? Was it her 10-year?
No. Yeah, maybe. I don't remember what year it was. It wasn't that long ago. It was probably our 10. Yeah, it was probably our 10-year anniversary. We redid our honeymoon, and it was wonderful. We had a great time. We didn't go to the same place. We went somewhere very close to it.
Yeah, it was close.
But
different
it was
vibe. More us.
Definitely more us. For sure. Now, I will say this. We keep saying that nothing worked out on our wedding day and nothing worked out for the honeymoon. We did get there. I did cry because when we walked into the lobby of this hotel, there were Easter lilies everywhere. And I'm so totally allergic to lilies. And I just thought, this is great. I'm going to be sick on my honeymoon, minus everything else that I was already going through. That when we got there, the room that we had reserved was under construction. And so the sweet, sweet man behind the counter upgraded us to the suite on the top floor.
The corner penthouse.
I'm sorry. Yes, the corner penthouse. And so that was awesome. And but then it was too cold to go swimming because we got married in March. And, you know, at the beach in the Gulf, it was still pretty cold. But anyway, we trudged through that... that honeymoon, and we waited 10 years later to redo it and had a great time. I did. I just stuck my tongue out at you.
Anyway.
Okay.
So this is something that I think is like super important in marriages that a lot of people royally screw up. Because I don't remember what the lead up to was, but you remember you and I were one time we were talking about like the divorce rate, why so many marriages fall apart. And I intoned to you that my opinion is people, and this is men and women, think you can do less work to keep a spouse than it took to get them. And I make that very like across the board, like whatever effort you put into attracting that person to be, want to be a permanent part of your life, whether it was dates, whether it was your personal appearance, whatever it was that hooked them. If you stop doing that as soon as you get married, that marriage is doomed.
I think it's harder work once you get married to keep it strong.
Potentially, yes. But it's certainly not less.
Well, at that point, you no longer have the separate apartment to run home to. Or you don't, a lot of times, you don't have the same friends that you had that you could vent to, or you could talk about your significant other to, you know, because gosh, I know for us, a lot of our friends disappeared because we were now a couple. We were married. We were at a different stage in our life. We weren't partying anymore. And so I think it's tougher because now you have to rely on that person you're supposed to rely on that person for your happiness, for your, you know, everything. You're relying on each other. And I think once you're married, the hard work starts. And we've seen that.
Yeah.
We've been through that.
But like I said, I mean, I guess I do agree with you that like you have to continue to work at it to make the marriage work. But I guess what I want to underline is we both believe you don't do less. Like yeah. there is no option to do mm-hmm. less work. And I mean, like, you know, call it what it is. I've lost a bit of hair and packed on a bit of poundage since we got married. But like, I still try to keep my physical appearance up to a level that my wife doesn't think that I look like a hobo.
Yeah. So the one requirement that I had when eyebrows. You started growing your Well, wait a second. We'll get to the eyebrows. The one requirement that I had when you started growing your beard out is that you did not look homeless. You could not look homeless.
I work at it to keep it looking nice.
You have to, because otherwise you're going to go to sleep one night and those clippers are coming out.
But anyway, like, you know, I think it's important to keep up your physical appearance. I think it's important to just like...
try?
Yeah, try. It sounds odd, but like... You know, like, I think what a lot of people fall into is that when they're in the honeymoon phase, when everybody's all lovey-dovey and puppy love is in the air and the hormones and the chemicals are running loose, it's really easy to be patient with that person and to be intimate with them and to, you know, do all those things. And then the minute the chemicals start shut down,
the rose-colored glasses,
it gets harder. And a lot of people, when it starts to get harder, they quit and they give up and... things start going downhill real fast. So, like, that's why I've always asserted that, like, always make the marriage stronger or the relationship stronger. That's mandatory. Like, it takes work. This is also the reason why I say that I believe that loving a person is a decision, because if it wasn't a conscious act, then it would come and go. But when you feel yourself like, that person is aggravating the hell out of me, but I still love them. That's not a chemical. That's not an emotion. That's a decision. That's saying that this person is doing something or is acting in a way that's making it difficult for me to love them, but I'm still loving them in spite of swimming upstream. Like salmon don't swim upstream because that's the way the current's going. They do that because that's where they want to go.
Yes.
So I view love in a lot of the same way. I am choosing to love this person. Sometimes I'm going with the current. Sometimes I'm going against it. But I'm always going to go this direction because that's the direction I want to go. And as far as like always making a marriage stronger, like I think it takes work. It takes give and take. It takes meeting a person where they are. Sometimes it means accepting that person, they're trying to pour from an empty cup. That's all they have. And you have to be patient with that and accept that. And you have to understand, from the other perspective, you have to understand that, like, as husband and wife, your ultimate goal is to try to fulfill that person's needs.
Yeah.
And those needs are, they're financial, they are physical needs, they are getting stuff off the top shelf. It's doing a load of laundry. It's making that person feel loved and valued. It's like all these emotional and, not the word physical, it's not the word I want, like mundane needs,
mm-hmm.
you know? It's anything that my spouse needs, it is my job to try to fulfill that.
Mm-hmm.
And it is being open and honest with communication to know what that person's needs are and to understand that sometimes that person wants to fulfill your needs. They cannot. They want to, but they can't. Maybe they only fulfill part of the need. Maybe they can't fulfill any of it. But it's still effort, and it's daily effort.
Mm-hmm.
Marriage doesn't take days off.
No, it doesn't take days off, and it never stops. Like, the hard work isn't just the first 3 to 5 years of your marriage. The hard work is literally every day, and it may not seem like hard work every single day, but there are times where Phil is very lovey-dovey. He wants to, you know, hug and kiss and do whatever. And then there are days, those same days, where I'm just like, if you get 5 feet close to me, I'm just going to punch you in your throat. Like, get away from me. Don't touch me. I don't want to be touched.
Cactus.
Yes, I'm a cactus. But I still have to think, and this took me a very long time to do, I still have to remember that Phil needs that. Phil is expressing those emotions right now because he needs that. And so I have to get out of my head and give him something. Like, I have to hold his hand, or I have to accept that he's going to be in the kitchen with me while I'm cooking dinner, or that I can smell his beard oil, or, you know, like, you're so close that I can just smell you, which sometimes pisses me off too. Like, I just don't even want to smell you. Like, there are days where I come home and just don't even look at me. You know, why don't you just go hide in the bedroom? And then when I come to the bedroom, you can go to the couch. Yeah. No.
Yeah. Except that's about the time I say, like, no, I live here. You can go hide outside if you'd like.
No. So it's work every day in a marriage. You have to work at it. In a relationship, just in a committed relationship. We keep saying marriage.
I think the audience will forgive us for ad-libbing marriage in place relationship because we are married.
Right.
And understand that this applies to any committed relationship.
Committed relationship.
So if we use the word married or committed relationship, just mix the two together for us.
There was a book, and it has become very, very popular, but it has also become this book of that gets made fun of a lot, and it's called The Five Love Languages. And when we were in couples counseling before we got married,
very popular at that time.
It had just come out, and our therapist recommended it, and it's still sitting on the bookcase over there, and we refer to it every now and then. I think now, I mean, 18 years together, 15 years married, we have a lot of things figured out. But during the rough seasons of our marriage, we would refer to this book, and we would reread it. And because my love language changed, at first it was gifts. And if Phil could just buy me that purse, or if Phil could just buy me those flowers, or if he could just leave sweet post-it notes or whatever. Well, those were really words of affirmation. But
and for Captain, live by a budget, you know, very conservative fiscal spending, that was difficult for us.
Yes, it was. But we made it work. You were words of affirmation. So me telling you, hey, I really appreciate you working two shifts tonight. Like, that just really puts us in a really great place. We missed you at home, but thank you for working two shifts. Words of affirmation were to Phil, but those have changed over the years. I don't want Phil to spend money on flowers that are going to die in a week. If you're going to buy me any sort of plant, buy me a plant that I can just keep on the shelf for a while and then it dies, because I can't keep plants alive. But I used to want the jewelry and the this and the that, and I'm not that person anymore. Like, I don't even know what my love language would be at this point. But I do recommend that book, The Five Love Languages. And there's also a Love Languages for Kids that we have never read, but we probably should. And it talks about how you can meet your child's needs on a, not intimate, that's not the word.
But, I know what you mean. Make sure you're speaking your child's love language.
Yeah.
So they feel valued.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is that. There was something else I was going to say, but I can't remember because my brain goes nigh to nothing during these episodes. But anyway, so making it stronger.
Yeah. But I think it's super important. I think that is the death knell of a lot of marriages, a lot of relationships, is that people think, I put in all the effort up front to get them to the altar, and then the effort goes down. Like, and like TikTok is like, and Instagram are like the worst places to view some of this, but in some ways the best. But like, I see all these videos over and over and over where women joke about, well, that was pre-marriage behavior. And I'm like, I have problems with that.
That's because our society now. That is a part of the throw it away and get something new.
Potentially, yeah. But I guess what I'm saying, I guess it goes back to what I'm saying. Like, if you go through your Rolodex of things that you used to do for your spouse before you got into this committed relationship, or when you were first courting them, and then you think, well, I don't have to do it anymore. I'm like, no, you probably do. You probably do. Because otherwise two things are happening. First of all, in the most clinical terms, you have pulled a bait and switch on this person. Because you've lulled them in with something, some behavior, dating, whatever. And then you've immediately stopped it once you feel like you don't have to anymore. And to me, that is manipulative at a minimum and bordering on abusive. But part of it is that I believe that part of marriage is it's a commitment to want to fulfill the other person's needs. So if the thing you are now withholding from them was something that fulfilled their needs before, you have literally reversed the expectation of that committed relationship by saying, now that we're in the committed relationship, now I can stop putting out effort. And I will never agree with that. Like, I think 15 years into marriage, like, I still want to treat you the way I did when we first got married, when we first dated.
I was going to say, you still want to date me, I think that's important for married and committed relationships, is that you still date your spouse.
Absolutely.
You still go out, you make an effort to go out. You leave the kids at home with a babysitter, or you let them go spend the night with grandma and grandpa. But you date your spouse. You have fun and snuggle in the kitchen while, you know, kiss me on my neck while I'm making ground beef or whatever. You date your spouse. We didn't do that at the beginning of our relationship. Mm-mm. When we were married. It wasn't one of those, like you were just describing, situations where, okay, now I have you, now I can just, whatever, lounge around and eat bonbons all day.
Our situation was a little unique, though, because like part of what made that difficult for us was like when we first got married, I still had a year of college left, so I was literally going to college and working a full-time job, and we had opposite schedules.
Yeah,
so
we only ever saw each other once. In the hall.
Like, literally, we had one day of the week we were both awake at the same time, and the other times, like, she would leave for work in the morning before I would wake up, because I work nights a lot, and I was working doubles for some of that.
And going to college.
Yeah, and going to college. So, like, the whole I want to date my wife thing, like, on that day we had off together, we were inseparable. We went out to eat. We went out and saw friends. We made plans to do stuff. I don't think we ever sat around the apartment because we just, that was our time together, and we were going to try to shove 6 days of not seeing each other into it together.
Yeah, we were
going
to make it count on that day. And that was a struggle. We did not have money. We lived in this one-bedroom apartment on the third floor, and we both worked in New Orleans. And so...
And I went to school in Hammond, so I was... Yeah,
so you were going an hour one direction, and then an hour the other direction every day.
Yeah.
But... Gosh, now I don't remember. I keep forgetting what I'm trying to say. But dating your spouse is so important. And we didn't learn that right away. We fell into that trench of, okay, well, I've, you know, got him or I got her. Now we're married, whatever. But work and life took hold of our relationship, I would say, and in our life. And so the focus moved and it shifted. And then we... many years later decided, okay, this isn't working. We're obviously missing something here, and figured out that the lack of intimacy and the not so much trust, but the wanting, the communication was definitely taking a dive in our relationship. And it was because we had stopped dating each other. And so we started dating each other again. And it really hit home after Piper was born.
Yes.
And I finally came out of this postpartum fog that I have to make an effort. I have to make an effort for you, but I have to make an effort for me because I choose you. I choose you over and over and over. And so we started dating each other again. And then that's when the second honeymoon happened. And I think we've gone pretty strong since that revelation of needing to date each other mm-hmm. again. Because what's going to happen is in 8 years, that little girl will probably decide, I don't want to live with mom and dad anymore. And then it's just going to be me and you. And if we want to... We have to love each other and date each other and figure out that we want to be with each other every day, because eventually that's going to happen. Our focal point will no longer be her, because she will be an adult and doing stuff on her own. And so raising her will be pretty much done. And then we'll only be able to focus on work and then coming home to each other. And if we don't put in that work to date each other at this point, what will we have in 8 years when she's gone?
That sounds very similar to something I told you years ago when we were kind of in our rocky patch. When I said, I don't want the day after she walks out of the door for you to turn around and realize you're standing in front of a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
Because
well,
I'm
stuck.
Yeah.
You said, I remember you saying that, and it has echoed in my mind ever since you said that.
She does listen.
I do. I understand, too, that at 18, yes, she may move out, but I will always be her parent.
We're going to be mentoring that. I mean, in much the same way, like, we still look to... I mean, yes, I feel like at 40 and approaching 40, like, we look to each other for a lot of things we used to look to our parents for. But, like, you know, I feel like well into her 20s, we're going to be mentoring her. But it's not going to be a daily, I don't feel like it's going to be a daily thing. And I feel like, yeah, I mean, at a certain point, it's just going to be you and me, and we have to kind of...
I have to like you.
I sure hope you do, because I don't plan on going anywhere.
Same.
Which takes us to the last bullet point. And this is a touchy one because, like, Gillian and I, we entered into this marriage making it very clear that there was no expectation of divorce. Like, we were going to work through whatever came up. And I've always allowed one broad exception to that.
Just one?
Just one. Some people would say infidelity, but to me, that's the same thing.
Okay, go for it.
When one party gives up, when one party quits, because a marriage, like Gillian said earlier, it's 100-100. It's not 50-50. It is each person all in 100% trying to make it work. And the minute one party thinks, I can put in less effort, or I can give less affection, or I can withhold money, or I can withhold
keep secrets,
anything like that. I call that you've given up on this marriage because you don't fundamentally understand how a marriage or how a committed relationship is supposed to work. It's 100-100. So I have always held that if one party quits, that marriage is gone. Mm-hmm. At that point, divorce is just a formalization of this marriage has been abandoned by one party and it cannot be held by the other unilaterally. So,
and abandoned by one party doesn't necessarily mean that that person has, you know, is cheating on that other person. Absolutely, yes, it can. But that, what I'm trying to say is, it doesn't necessarily mean that. It just means that that person is no longer committed to the other one to make them happy, to give them the intimacy that they deserve and should have from their spouse, or to date them, or, you know, all those things that go into a committed relationship that we've talked about. It doesn't mean that that person is cheating on them and abandoned the relationship that way. It just means that that person, it could mean that that person is just a body in the same home.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, that's a very broad category with a lot of facets to it. But like, that's, I like broad categories because it means I get to say one thing that encompasses all of these. Like if you are cheating on your spouse, then you are interrupting the bond of intimacy you're only supposed to have with your spouse by including this other party in it. And that is giving intimacy over here that should be reserved for your spouse. So that is abandoning the marriage. This is one that I don't think happens super often, but I bet most people would agree with it. If, let's say, husband and wife meet, they get married, husband has a good job. Day after they get married, husband comes home and says, you know what? I don't feel like working anymore. I'm just going to stay here and, like, you financially support the two of us. If that wife immediately took his butt to a divorce lawyer, everyone in society would say justified. Because he had a good job, he was supporting the family, now he decides he doesn't want to work anymore, he's going to lie around and be a louse. No one would blame that wife for divorcing that man. Because he is now, like, one of the things he was bringing to the marriage was financial support, supporting the family, caring for everyone. And now he is voluntarily withholding that by saying, I don't want to work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But, controversy time.
I told y'all that Phil might have rants on the raising values, might happen.
I try not to rant, but again, I like to draw parallels to show where some people have installed a double standard in their head that doesn't make any sense when you think about it. But society has told you the double standard is acceptable, so I have to confront it a little bit.
Go for it.
So, woman divorces husband because he quit his job, he won't provide for the family. Yes, queen, slay, take him to the cleaners. Husband is having intimacy withheld from him, takes wife to divorce court, society tells husband, how dare you put expectations on her?
Mm-hmm.
Explain to me the difference.
I don't believe that there is a difference.
but you agree most people would say that somehow this is a different situation because the man is wrong.
I do agree that divorce cases or law, I don't even know how to properly say this, it will most likely always favor the woman. Poor, pitiful woman who this horrible, awful man is doing these things to, and never seeing that the woman could possibly be in the wrong. But even if they do see that she's in the wrong, there's always some excuse that, well, she's just a poor, pitiful woman. And this big, disgusting, ugly patriarchy man is...
I feel personally attacked.
Oh, please. Please. Give me a break. It will most always favor the woman. No matter if he is the best thing since sliced bread, he's still a man. And therefore, he is the one who should be blamed. It doesn't always work like that. Yes, there are cases where the judge is like, give me a break. Like, no, ma'am, this is not how this is going to work. And that husband or that man might get custody of the children. He, you know, whatever happens is, you know, in favor of the man. Mm-hmm. So.
And I'm using like stereotypes to illustrate this, but it works the other way too. Like, again, I view marriage as your ultimate goal, which you should want to do, is to fulfill the needs of your spouse. So if my wife has a need for physical intimacy, even if it's just a hug, like let's say she's a hugger and first thing in the morning when I haven't had my coffee and I'm just in a miserable, I'm a miserable human being before I've had my coffee. Like my wife knows that about me.
I'm usually asleep.
Yes. Well, it helps because I wake up earlier than her most of the time. So by the time she wakes up, I am caffeinated, therefore human. But like, let's say she likes to hug first thing in the morning and I don't like to hug. If I am consistently rejecting my wife's need to hug me first thing in the morning, or like you always make a point of kissing me on the way out the door in the morning.
I can't leave the house without doing it.
And if I consistently, like, sorry, honey, I'm too busy with work, I can't kiss you, and this was like day after day after after day, it doesn't matter what the need is that's not being fulfilled. It only matters that you're not fulfilling your partner's needs.
Yes.
And if you are not fulfilling your partner's needs, I would challenge you to ask yourself, why? Like, it shouldn't be the threat of divorce or societal pressure or anything else that makes you want to fulfill that person's needs. If you love them, you should just want to fulfill their needs or their wants. It should come naturally as breathing.
Mm-hmm.
My lung, I have this weird condition where if I don't breathe for a while, my brain tells the rest of my body, get the program before bad things happen. And I just naturally start breathing without thinking about it. And fulfilling Gillian's wants and needs is just part of that.
Aww.
I want her to be a happy, content person. Therefore, it's not something that takes effort. Sometimes it's something that takes some wheeling and dealing on the budget side of things. Because this lady would be on a weekend beach trip like twice a month if I would let her. But my checking account says no. But at the same time, now this is something I was going to get into earlier, but I didn't. But like, you know, you and I have talked about long-term plans we have, that things we would like building a forever home and everything. And that is going to require a certain amount of capital to be able to pull off. So on the one hand, I have your immediate, I want to go to the beach this weekend. And I have your long-term, I want this. And I'm trying to like, I'm trying to do this, like, if she really wants this, I really have to, like, pay down the debt, pay down the mortgage, put the money away in retirement. It has to happen, or in 20 years, she's going to turn around and say, why don't we have the money to do this? And me saying, because we went to the beach every month, is not going to be an acceptable answer.
Are you sure?
I'm not anymore.
I think you would definitely use that as an acceptable answer because you use it now of, you know, it's not that we don't use the money that we, you know, what is it? Using the fruits of our labor or whatever, taking advantage of the fruits of our labor. We do, but we don't travel as much as I would like. But I understand that. I just keep that vision of this beautiful home in the woods there. And I understand it. Am I disappointed? God, yes. I really want to go to the beach. Well, but I also really want to retire in a beautiful home that we've worked very hard for and being comfortable for the rest of our lives.
Yeah. And part of that is also the fact that, like, you know, within the last couple of years, there's been so much uncertainty in the world and there's, like, inflation has made most of our monthly budgeted expenses, some of them have doubled in the last several years. So it's been one of those things of, and in tandem with that, there's been some changes of employment. So, like, we've had to kind of revise our budget and the amount of disposable income we once had that we could apportion to those trips has disintegrated. So could we take another look at it, cut something here, cut something there, put more dollars back into the budget? Potentially, yes. But it's just been one of those things where, like, we have to ask ourselves at the end of the day, what is important and where do we apportion those dollars?
Mm-hmm.
But back to divorce before we start rolling this up, because we're an hour and a half.
Yeah, we need to kind of break this up for them.
So
divorce for us was never an option. It was a word that wasn't in our vocabulary. And that was something that we agreed upon well before we got married, that there, besides the extenuating circumstances, divorce was not an option. We would work through it, we would get through it, and we would make this marriage work. There was one time in our relationship during that horrible postpartum phase of my life where you told me, if you quit, I quit. But if you don't quit, then we'll work through this. And we said the word divorce. I think divorce came out of my, I don't know, it came out of one of our mouths. It was only spoken one time in our relationship ever. Mm-hmm. And it scared the hell out of me so much that it was the one thing, your post-it notes all over the house, your neck rubs, your everything. It was the one thing that woke me up and said, oh my God, why, how have we gotten to this point where that word has come out of our mouth?
I don't even remember which one of us said it.
I remember being in the car and talking about, is that where this needs to go? And that is the one thing that woke me up and got me going, no, I have to go to the doctor. I have to get on medication that's going to help this. I have to get through this dark tunnel, this dark time in my life, because one, I don't like feeling like this. And two, it is destroying our marriage, destroying it. And then we also had Piper during that time. Obviously, it was postpartum, but it was not, I was not connecting to my child the way I should have been connecting to my child. We have never talked about divorce since then. We've never held that conversation over each other's head. We've never gone back other than to talk about it like we're talking about it now and said, well, you remember that time, you know, it was never a threat.
It was never a threat.
And it is something I grew up in a household that the threat was always there. It was always spoken. It was always thrown in each other's face. And it was always a fear of mine that my parents were going to be the next family, the next couple to get divorced. I can remember being a child after my parents fighting and saying, are y'all going to get a divorce now? Does this mean you're going to get a divorce now? And I mean, the divorce didn't come until we got, I was in college. Divorce didn't come.
They were divorced by the time you and I met.
Yeah. But now they're remarried. Go figure. So I grew up in a household where I was constantly scared of divorce because I knew what it meant. Even as a child, I knew what that meant. And having two Christmases and having two houses and having two everything was not something that I was excited about. I was petrified that my parents were going to leave each other. And the house home that they created was going to be destroyed. And so when we said that word, all of those emotions as a child rushed back to me. And all I could think of was, I'm not doing this to our marriage. I'm not doing this to my husband. And I'm not doing this for our child. At that point, we didn't know if we wanted to have more children. But I could not fathom. It just did not compute. And all it really did was wake me up and say, oh God, no, how did we get here? And we're not staying here. Like, let's go put it in drive. We're doing this. And so it woke me up. And that is the only time we've ever said divorce. We have grown stronger since then. We have worked harder since then. And we've been very open with each other about when we reach those snags or we roll through those potholes in the road, that we have to stop the car and talk about it. We can't let this fester and turn into something worse than what it already is. And that is something I can say that I'm super proud of in our marriage, is that nothing sits, nothing spoils, nothing goes bad. We talk about it, we get through it. We come up with a game plan, and whether the game plan says at the end of the day, we've discussed it, now throw it away, or we've discussed it and here's what the work that still needs to be done. But we talk about that together as a couple, not with a child. It's the two of us, because it's our relationship that has to work out. and we talk about those things and we come to a common goal that we know needs to happen, or we decide this is the outcome. Like, these are the two outcomes that could happen if we don't do this, or we do this. And every time we always go to, we have to put in the work. We have to make this happen. You have to help me. You have to believe and understand that there, as we work through this problem, there will be snags. There'll be smaller snags. I may fall back into the old pattern, or I may stumble as I walk through this with you. Just hold my hand and keep going with me. I'm going to start crying. Are you crying? Don't cry. I'm going to start crying. Anyway, that is, I'm super proud of that in our relationship. Move on. I told you this is like therapy for me. So,
yeah. But like I said, divorce is not, it's not a word that we throw around. It's not a word that we use as a threat or to leverage each other. I mean, and really the only reason I even brought it up at that point you're talking about was because, like, I just saw you caving in and I didn't see you fighting it. And it was not meant to be an ultimatum. It was a very serious question of, like, do you still want this marriage?
Yeah, I think that's what you asked me.
Because to me, this was very simple. This was in very clinical terms. I would have been extraordinarily upset if you had said no.
But like, yeah, were you prepared for no?
Emotionally, no, but psychologically. I mean, at that point, babe, I was at the point where I was like, she might have just given up. Like, there may be no saving this because she's not doing the work. She's not fighting. She's mm-hmm. quit. But to me, yeah. It was, if you have quit, I cannot keep this together by myself. It can't be done. Mm-hmm. So at this point, what needs to happen is we need to figure out how to separate and how to make sure Piper is taken care of. Because at the end of the day, I'm a very clinical, rational person. So my initial and most ultimate worry, if you had wanted to separate the marriage, would have been, how do we make sure Piper's taken care of? Mm-hmm. And after that would have been all of the mechanical, how do we subdivide everything in the house, subdivide finances, like how do we make this work? But I really wasn't what I wanted. I wanted you to join me in fighting through that point in time of our lives so that we could reclaim what we had once had. And I believed it was possible, and so did you. And like, that's all I would offer to a couple that is facing thoughts of divorce is my yardstick for a relationship has always been, this person must bring more happiness into my life than pain. And that's marriage, that's friends, that's family even, that's everybody across the board. You must bring me more happiness than you bring me pain, because I've hurt my wife's feelings a time or two. It's unavoidable. I'm a man. I'm not the brightest bulb in the box sometimes. And even unintentional pain, like, there have been some times in our lives we have scared the hell out of each other because we thought we were about to lose each other. And that's a function of life. But I have to believe that Gillian brings me more joy and more pride and more of all those positive emotions than the times where she has absolutely scared the hell out of me and I thought bad things were about to happen. And if she didn't, then I'd be questioning, like, why is this person in my life to any degree, much less marriage? But I don't know. I'm not sure where I was going with that ramble. I would just say that, like, if you're facing down the topic of divorce, like, you have to really ask yourself, is this person fighting to save this? Because if one party quits, and however y'all define quit between the two of y'all, that is an individual decision. But if one party quits, it's over. At that moment, that marriage is done. Everything you do past that point with the courts and everything else is a formality. The marriage is over.
It is. Yeah.
And I hate to say that because, like, I don't believe that divorce should be anywhere near as common as it is today. I don't agree with no-fault divorce. I wish like hell more judges told angry husband and angry wife, get out of my courtroom, go home and fix this. Like, there's no reason to dissolve this marriage and disrupt the family. And there's no reason to do all this. You two need to go be adults and figure your lives out. Get out of here. Unfortunately, I believe that a default position for most people is it's not fun. It's not easy. It's time to
find something fun again.
Yeah. And I'm sorry to say, you know, like marriage is not all, it's not all fun and games and adventures and.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, divorce to me would be acceptable in abusive relationships.
Yes. Because if you're abusing a person, you don't love them.
No, absolutely. And then one party has given up on this marriage, like totally stopped fighting for it. And then what was the other one you said?
That's all I gave was if one party has given up. Because, like, to me, that covers infidelity. That covers alienation of affection, which is, you know, just lack of intimacy, however you define that. Like, I believe one party giving up on the marriage, that's the umbrella that covers it all. Because even if, like, if I started physically abusing you or emotionally abusing you, I have violated, what's the way to put this? I violated the terms and the spirit of being your husband by treating you that way.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that falls under the heading of, I've given up on the marriage. I am not treating you like you are my wife or like I am your husband. I'm treating you like a victim. And at that moment, I quit the marriage.
Yeah.
So, like, what do you... That's why I use that one umbrella term. It, to me, at least, it anything you would throw at me to say, well, this is why my marriage ended, it either fits under that umbrella or it doesn't. And if you say, well, I fell out of love with them, go back to what I said at the top of the show. Love's a choice.
Yeah.
If you make a choice not to love that person anymore, don't try to sell it to me like it was unavoidable or it was whatever. You chose not to love that person anymore. And that sounds really, that probably sounds pretty hard, but I'm sorry. That's just the way I see it.
Yeah.
Like, there have been times in our lives together where I know the two of us, one or the other, for any variety of reasons, have been difficult to love. I've had my low spots, you've had your low spots, but throughout all that, we have continued to make the commitment that I'm going to love this person no matter how hard it is. And I think that's what's missing from a lot of marriages. I mean, you know, whatever song it was, Love Is All It Takes or Love Is Enough. I will find it because I've got a song lyrics rattling around in my brain. But like, I believe that as sentimental and silly as it sounds, I think love is all it takes. But you have to really commit to loving that person because there's so much pressure coming at marriages from the world around us and so many distractions and so many things that are there to tear a marriage apart. It takes work.
Mm-hmm. Great show.
I think so. So long show. I kind of figured us talking about our views on marriage would be long, but yeah. You know.
Well, thank y'all for either watching and participating in the comments and when the audio hits. Audio is now hitting on Fridays, so it will drop right after.
Are we going to continue to drop this with Matter of Facts, or we want to drop it on a different day?
We'll discuss that and we'll figure that out.
But it does come out on all the same distribution points that Matter of Facts podcast comes out on. So does Raising Value. So if you're subscribed to the former, you get the latter. Just, you know,
all right.
Hang back and chill.
All right. It's time to say goodbye.
And it's time for me to go put on work clothes and...
get the chainsaw out. He acts like that I've asked him to do something awful today. All right. Y'all enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Take care, y'all. Bye.